You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam, Jam, Packard, the great Marcus Morris is expected to miss another week. We got some more Kyrie Irving talk, as usual, and we're going to answer a bunch of questions because we didn't know what else to talk about, basically. We'll start off with the Marcus Morris news. Expected to miss one more week. How much do you think he's going to change what they do, Sam? How much of an impact will Marcus Morris be for this team?
I think he's going to make a pretty big impact on both ends of the floor. He's a solid three-point shooter. He's another body that you can have play the wing, and he can guard the types of players like Giannis, like LeBron, that the Celtics have struggled in guarding. He's just a guy with a lot of size. I mean, he's not like the tallest guy in the world, but he is big, and he's going to help with rebounding. And I just think his outside shooting is also going to be helpful. So instead of turning to guys like Jabari Bird when you're needing like wing help, or Semi Ojeleye in the Bucks game, you'll have a guy who's a vet who knows how to play basketball and can. Historically, he can get buckets on his own. So I think just having like an experienced guy and putting him into the lineup is going to be tremendously helpful, especially at that three position, which is where they're going to be lacking without Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, I think Marcus Morris is going to be huge for them. I thought he was going to be huge for them at the beginning of the season, but then when Hayward went down, it just magnifies the need for someone like Morris, who can get you buckets, who can defend the best player, the best wing on the other team, who can play stretch forward, who can knock down some outside shots, even though he hasn't been a great outside shooter historically. They need somebody like that. Their bench was ridiculously thin in game three already. And obviously Marcus Smart's going to come back pretty soon from his rolled ankles. And Marcus Morris, he's going to be a big deal, man. He's going to be a very big deal for this team. I think right now, you know, they're just too young, too inexperienced. They haven't played offense well. They've actually defended pretty well. But I think Morris just helps them in every single way. And, you know, last game, what were they missing? 105 minutes of guys who were expected to be among their closing lineup with Hayward, Marcus Smart, and Marcus Morris. So that's a huge deal when you're already down that many key pieces and you're turning to guys who, in some cases, literally had not played in the NBA before, like Jabari Bird and Abdul Nader, who played in each of the last two games. So, need Morris. Need him. Need him. Need him. Need him. Need him.
I don't think he's going to be, like, amazing, but I think, like, he hasn't, like, I have a lot of faith in him to knock down the three from the corner, which is not something that we've seen any Celtic really excel at. Jabari Bird missed a couple of attempts, and Nader missed a couple of attempts. It's just like, if you have a solid guy who's reliable in that corner, that you'd run a Kyrie Al Horford pick and roll, there should be that guy in the weak side who can just catch and shoot, and I feel like Marcus Morris can do that. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe I haven't watched enough Marcus Morris, but for some reason in my head, it's just like, yeah, no, he can absolutely knock down corner threes, and I think that would be a huge make their offense a little bit more dynamic, because it feels really reliant on either them forcing kind of a switch right now, or just Kyrie Irving making a play and doing one-on-one basketball.
Yeah, their offense, it's very clear that they're new to this. They're not running cohesive offense. For three quarters against Philly, their offense was just abominable. 18 turnovers in the first three quarters. Like, that was one of the worst games I've ever seen for three quarters. Just despicable. The refs were terrible. The players were terrible. Everybody was terrible. I was terrible sitting in there in the press row. I was
watching you, though. You were pretty bad.
Yeah, I was very underwhelming, to say the least.
the hair game was on point, though.
The hair game has got to be on point. That's all I've got going for me. All right, so we've got a little nugget from Jason Lloyd, a great Cavs beat reporter for The Athletic. And it just really paints Kyrie Irving like a guy maybe his former teammates didn't like too much. Maybe that's not fair. I'll read the quote the sentence from Jason Lloyd's piece. I asked a couple of players in the Cavs locker room what they thought about the whole incident. The consensus, now you're seeing the real Kyrie Irving. And so the real Kyrie Irving just tells people to SSD? Is that what the real Kyrie does? I don't know how to take that quote. Maybe it's just guys that are still a little salty over the trade request. Nobody in the Cavs organization has publicly maligned Kyrie Irving, like has publicly dissed him. But that's not a great look for Kyrie if guys on the other team are like, yeah, well, he can be a little bit of a jerk sometimes.
It kind of felt like a bullshit quote to me. It was just like, he didn't actually like quote anyone. And it felt like something you say about the guy who left town. And maybe this is just like kind of putting on the green glasses and defending Kyrie now because he's a member of the Celtics. But what he do telling a fan to suck my dick after he yells something at you feels like something I've seen countless NBA players do. I don't know if it's really like indicative of Kyrie's general persona.
To be honest, this is going to be a hot take. Super hot take.
I like it.
I thought the way Kyrie handled that was almost endearing. Like I felt like a lot of the times when he speaks to the press, he doesn't seem totally open and totally candid. And you kind of wonder, does he even believe some of the things that he's saying? Is this real? Is he giving us his honest opinion? In that case, he was real. He was totally real. And he's like, you know what? I'm human. When guys heckle you, sometimes you snap back. And I don't regret it. I take responsibility for it. Wish I hadn't done that in front of the kids. But I thought that was totally refreshing, his honesty there. And especially in Boston, like, guys kind of probably like that. Like, awesome. Not only did he snap back at a fan like that, a jackass fan, but then he said he didn't want to take it back. He was okay with it. He made a mistake, and he was cool with it. I thought for the first time, like, Kyrie was totally honest and totally Kyrie, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and it was endearing to hear, like, an athlete not immediately go into what I call, like, athlete speak and put up, like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Both sides played hard. There's, like, the cliches that some athletes just immediately go into, and it was great for Kyrie just to say, no, I don't regret it. Like, that's what I said in the moment.
We've now spun Kyrie's talk, him saying S my D, into a positive, by the way. I just want to throw that out there.
I did that for 20 minutes last night. Believe me, we totally justified everything. Just because it happened in Philadelphia, and that's how you speak the language there. But there was an interesting thing. There was actually a roundtable on SI.com put together by Richard Deitch. It was just asking a bunch of different NBA questions. Our main man Adam Himmelsbach was one of the people on it. And it was one of the questions was, who's the hardest person to interview in the NBA? And I think Michael Lee of The Vertical said that Kyrie Irving was probably the hardest guy he's had to interview just because he's very he interpreted Kyrie to be very guarded and like not really always wanting to talk to the press. So I was kind of curious from your perspective as someone who's been in scrums with him, what's it been like with Kyrie so far, just in their very early part of the season?
He's been very willing to talk with us, very good about – he's been pretty pleasant. He hasn't at all been a jerk. But I do think that he is – he seems a little guarded. Like, he's not – and this is not fair to make this comparison, but Isaiah Thomas – last year was like super open, super candid, always told you exactly how he felt no matter what it was. And Kyrie's very much not like that. He kind of I don't know. I don't feel all the time like he is super open, and that's fine. I don't give a shit.
That's not true. You would rather him be super open. It makes it easier to do your job.
Well, yeah. I mean, it'd be great if he was super open. And I did think the hell no comment was like first real window into like that was the first time he was like, I don't give a damn. I'm just gonna say what I really feel, and that's it. And that was cool to me. I think it's cool when guys are fully open and honest, because they're humans too, and they deal with all the human pressures that we do. When they hear a heckling fan, they're not likely to respond, but sometimes they respond. And sometimes that happens. So yeah, Kyrie, he's been good though. He's been good with us. He just hasn't been totally open.
And that's the type of thing where it feels like he needs to like kind of get to know the people asking him questions. And some players, no matter what, they're just like going to go into the kind of athlete talk. But like, he's only been here for a couple of months. He doesn't know exactly how people are going to react, and he doesn't know the people asking him the questions as much. So you can understand why someone would be guarded in that type of a situation. With Isaiah, he went through it for 2.5 years. And yeah, that's part of his personality, is just to be kind of open. But you would understand that, like, especially a guy playing in a new city is not going to be completely honest 100% of the time. It's like Isaiah was very willing to kind of throw Brad under the bus and say, yeah, our rotations were terrible. Where it's like Kyrie in his first three games is not going to say, like, they're playing me too much off the ball. Like, I need the ball in my hand if we're going to win. So it's something you'd expect, hopefully, that he would get more honest, like, over time.
Yeah, and the things he has been not totally honest about, you can understand. Like, it was for him requesting a trade from Cleveland. Why did it happen? I still feel like he hasn't given any real answer about that. And he said, like, I'll probably never divulge that, because that's not what grown-ups do. And you can understand that. Like, you can understand there are relationships with other people involved. And there are things that I'm sure he doesn't want to share, because it's a sensitive subject for you requesting a trade from somewhere. That's a sensitive thing. So I get why he hasn't been open about some stuff. But more honesty would be cool. More total rawness. Give me rawness. I need raw Kyrie. I need petty Kyrie. I need crazy Kyrie. Even just give me real Kyrie.
Well, you know what? I'm going to be at the game, I guess tonight, as people are listening to it, against the Knicks. So I'll stop by Kyrie's locker pregame and I'll get that raw and cut from him. I'll just, you know what?
Don't ask him where LeBron is.
I won't ask him any questions about LeBron, and I'll secretly record him. That will go over well, right?
There you go. All right, let's get to the questions. Let's get to the questions. We got my boy Addy Shepherd is a little optimistic about Jabari Bird. Asked us, is Jabari Bird the new Tony Allen? I'll let you take this one,
sir. No. Jabari Bird's like one main skill. I know Brad was trying to hype up his perimeter defense, but if Jabari Bird's like one thing is that he hits threes. He is a good shooter. And that's never something that like Tony Allen was known for. And also Tony Allen's an amazing, amazing defensive player.
He's played his ass off. Yeah, he's one of the best defensive players of all time. Like, first team all defense type of guy, awesome, awesome player. Jabari Bird's on a two-way contract. Let's just pump the brakes a little bit and not give him the Tony Allen label right away. That's just disrespectful to the grit and grind man himself, the grind father, Tony Allen. I mean, I don't allow Tony Allen slander on this podcast. So sorry.
I will say, though,
Jabari Bird's got a long ways to go to get there.
I will say I really like Jabari Bird talking about honesty after the game. It was just like, no, I was not at all prepared for this game. I had no idea what I was doing out there. And also, I like the fact that he said he was like very disappointed that he missed his first shot because he was expecting it to go in. That's the shooter's mentality. So although he's nowhere near Tony Allen, I'm here for the Jabari Bird era.
Yeah, and it is impressive that on a two-way contract, he convinced Brad Stevens that he's worth a shot in the second half of a close game. Like, that's pretty rare. And so obviously Brad has liked what he's seen throughout preseason from Jabari, not quite Tony Allen Bird.
Speaking of Jabari Bird, there's a question from our man B-Wob on Spots, or just Bob. Can you just go into a little detail on how the two-way contract works as it relates to Jabari Bird?
Okay, so the Celtics, he can have 45 days with the Celtics. And those days are, you know, if they're working out, if they have practice, if they're, I think, traveling, if they have a game, those all count toward his 45 days. So the rest of the time he'll have to be in Maine with the Red Claws. Unless, because they have an open roster spot, they could technically rip up his two-way contract at some point and sign him to an NBA contract, at which point he'll be able to play on their actual team on an NBA contract. So those are the possibilities for him. Right now, obviously, because of how little depth the Celtics have, how many injuries the Celtics have, I think he'll probably stick with the Celtics for a while. But I don't know ultimately what they'll choose to do with him and whether they would even consider signing him to a full contract or not. So I don't know.
With the open roster spot, though, they do have the flexibility to kind of add him if he has been productive. And his 45 days didn't actually start till today, Monday, because that's when the D-League season, I guess, officially started. But with that open roster spot, it's like it's not the biggest deal if he's productive to like for them to come in and actually offer him a contract. But I don't know if you'd only do that if he's like playing significant minutes for over like the next month, which ideally, as much as I am a fan of the Jabari Bird era, ideally Jabari Bird's not like you're not relying on him. Like you'd rather keep that open roster spot for maybe signs or like sign and trades or buyouts or something else. You don't necessarily just want to immediately fill that up with Jabari Bird after like 45 days in the season.
All right. Patrick Colburn wants to know how long before Kyrie really starts to take off here and gets adjusted to the system. It doesn't seem at the moment that everyone is comfortable deferring to him as they did Isaiah. I think it's very clear Kyrie is feeling things out. I think it's also very clear he's trying to be this point guard and he's trying to make this team basketball thing work. And his job, like, it was tough. It was going to be a tough adjustment to begin with to go from the most isolation-centric offense in the league to, you know, Brad Stevens, where they have so much motion, so much player movement, so much ball movement. It was going to be a huge adjustment. And then they lose Gordon Hayward. He's playing with all rookies that sometimes the rookies don't even know the plays. I don't know how long it'll take for him to start to take off, but it's definitely going to be a bit of an adjustment. You can tell right now watching him, he's just not fully comfortable. He's not there yet. He's not playing with the same reckless confidence, I think, that he had in Cleveland. And maybe that's part of him just trying to be a true point guard. But there are also times when this Celtics team is going to need him to just put the ball in the basket because they don't have many shooters, many scorers anymore. And they're going to need Kyrie to be better than he has been through the first three games.
Yeah, I can understand him trying to adjust to a new system. And like he has this reputation of being the isolation guy, so he's really trying to work within the offense. But at some point, you would think that just like you mentioned that he has played in this super isolation system, and we saw countless times at the end of games in the fourth quarter last year where the Celtics offense was, let's just give it to Isaiah and he'll figure it out. At some point, Kyrie Irving's like game is naturally just lends itself to give it to Kyrie and have him figure it out. And so I don't know if he's unwilling at this point to kind of just try and take over a game, or because it's early in the season, Stevens is trying to have them work on kind of just like going through the plays and going through the offense to try and generate points here. But at some point, I fully expect Kyrie just to be like, okay, he can point to his watch too and say it's the fourth quarter, because he is probably one of the best isolation scorers in the game. And I know you got to get like used to your new surroundings, but eventually he's just got to like be great at what he's great at, and that's just beating guys off the dribble. Now, one of the interesting things is that like Stevens mentioned, and we mentioned this last night in the podcast, that they went to Shane Larkin because they were blitzing Kyrie in the pick and roll, and they needed like to change something up. So if teams are just going to like totally double Kyrie, he's going to have to rely on and do more playmaking. But eventually, if you would expect them to get all their players in to space the floor with a kind of Al Horford playing that center and playing that five out, and just let Kyrie go to work. So it's still real early in the season. I expect him to get like more comfortable, but at some point, they're going to need just him to take over a fourth quarter and go and win them a basketball game. And you know what? Coming up against the New York Knicks, that's a great team to do that against, because they have zero people who can defend a point guard.
Yeah, and I think the double team thing is interesting, because LeBron James took so much defensive attention that teams weren't able to just send everyone at Kyrie. It's just not something you could do. Cleveland had shooters everywhere. They had LeBron, the greatest player of this generation. Like, it was a perfect situation for Kyrie to not be double teamed as often as a guy his caliber should be. And now it's different. The Celtics don't have a lot of shooting. They don't have LeBron. So he's going to have more defensive attention than he's faced since early in his career. And I think that'll be an adjustment too. So I think that was important that you know, they brought Shane Larkin in because Kyrie was getting doubled. Because in a lot of ways, you want Kyrie to get doubled so that he can make plays, but he has to handle it well. And so that's just another part of the adjustment, big part of the adjustment. A lot of things to adjust this year for Kyrie. We've got King Ali 96. Do you believe Jaylen Brown will be leading the Celtics in points after Kyrie this year? Should the Celtics free Jahlil Okafor? I think he's talking about Jahlil Okafor. I assume he's talking about Jahlil Okafor and not Emeka.
Does he just say Okafor?
Free Okafor, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Emeka Okafor is free to sign with whatever team he wants. But let's focus on the first part. Will Jaylen Brown be the second leading scorer on this team? I can't think of who would be even challenge him for that. That spot right now. Al Horford is not a guy who's going to go out and really, there's going to be some games where he's over 15 and approaching 20, but that's not the most consistent thing. It feels like with how aggressive Jaylen is being in just in terms of pretty much anytime he gets the ball in transition or anytime he gets the ball on the perimeter, he will be attacking the basket. So it feels like he's the natural selection for the second leading scorer on the team. I don't know. Tatum's not going to score that much, and if he does, that's amazing, but I don't know who else you're going to put on there. I don't even know who he's competing with at this point.
I think that might be a hot take. I mean, what did Al Horford score last year? 15 a game-ish?
I like how we're both going to basketballreference.com right now.
Yeah, well, that was solid podcasting right there while we paused. And
he was scored 13 a game last year.
13?
The most he's ever had in his career is 18 a game.
Yeah. So
Jaylen Brown in the first three games had like 2018 and
so he averaged something else. He averaged 14 points a game. Yeah. Is Jaylen definitely going to score more than 14 points a game?
I wouldn't say definitely, but I feel like if you're comparing, like, I feel like Jaylen has the potential to go for 20 each night more than Al Horford does, just because Al Horford, we don't see him taking that many shots. But how many attempts alone has Jalen had in the first three games? It feels like he's near 20 each time. And if someone who just shoots that much, you would expect them to just to get those counting stats.
I think another part of it too, though, is how much does Marcus Morris change things for Jaylen Brown, whether it's touches, minutes, whatever else. I'm interested to see how that works out. I think Tatum can score that thing too, man. Tatum's got to let it fly though. Brad said a few times, like, we just want that guy to shoot. He's got that Kelly Olynyk thing sometimes where he's wide open and he just doesn't let it fly. Just let it fly, Jason. I know you're a rookie. Go ahead.
The most frustrating thing about Tatum is that when he catches and he has the open three, he pumps fakes and takes the one dribble in to take the long two. He's got that bit of the Avery Bradley long two disorder. And I don't know if he's like just not comfortable with his shot or not as confident a shot at the three, but you're right. Just like shooting off the catch, and it's something that Brad mentioned. If he can do that and make shots consistently, he's going to be a real problem for the rest of the NBA, because he's been like really just an like amazing offensive player so far.
He's the real deal, that kid. Nathan,
he's the deal Holyfield.
Nathan Nickerson, can you stop talking about guys in the shower? No, we can't, Nathan.
No, and shout out to everyone who is naked right now in the shower. I would recommend using shampoo and then rinse and repeat using a little conditioner. I have like some of the softest hair that anyone's ever touched. I've got many compliments historically about how soft my hair is, and it's because I've been rinsing and repeating since I was 14 years old. And so if you're in the shower right now, add another thing of conditioner. Just condition your hair, guys. The ladies will like it. The guys will like it. Everyone likes some soft hair. So that's my shower take. And we're never going to stop talking about people in the shower listening to the Raining Jays, because that's how you know the fans love us, is because they make us part of their daily routine. They need us in the shower.
They need us in the shower. All right. Ricky Rokowski wants to know, how long into his visit did Ainge decide that Fultz is a head case? Did he start texting other GMs before Fultz even left? I think everybody needs this. Is another pump the brakes moment. Markelle Fultz is going to be really good. He's going through some weird, weird things with his shot right now. I don't know what the hell the deal is with that. That's one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Like, this guy who's a very good college scorer, incredible college scorer, just goes ahead and overhauls his entire shot before he gets to the NBA, and now doesn't even feel comfortable shooting threes. Shout out to the Philly crowd for being ruthless. When he hit two free throws in a row, the crowd gave him the mock cheers. Guys, it was his second NBA game. Just chill out. Markelle Fultz, he's going to be really good. I do think the Celtics should feel really confident with that trade right now, because Tatum looks like he's going to be really good. And even if Fultz is really good, like, if they're both really good, then the Celtics are going to win that trade because they picked up another piece on top of it. So Celtics gotta be excited about that trade right now.
The problem I have with Markelle Fultz is, like, he just has a resting, like, sad face. He just looks generally upset with whatever he's doing. He looks like a sad boy. And the messing with his mechanics just, like, goes in. It just, like, seems like he's depressed and a bit of a head case. And I know that is not a reasonable take, but I like to think that Brad Stevens called his guidance counselor in high school, and his guidance counselor in high school was like, yo, this kid is messed up, and like really told Brad Stevens some things that, like, you can't really rely on this kid. He gets rattled easily. He's a historic sad boy. And so I would think that Danny Ainge probably found that out within like 3 seconds of talking to him, and then it was immediately texting GM. So I'm going to go the exact opposite of you. Markelle is forever a sad boy, resting sad boy face, and I'm so happy the Celtics don't have him, because he will never be good because of how sad he is.
All right. Yeah, that's a strong Markelle Fultz take there. What if he gets happy?
I'm all about.
What if he gets happy?
Well, that's the key. But do you think he's going to get happy in a city of Philadelphia when they're mock jeering him and cheering him when he's just making free throws? When he redid his entire free throw mechanics just over the summer for no reason? It doesn't make any sense. He's a head case, and he'll forever be a head case. And when he's very good, and like at the end of this year, I'm super glad that this is a daily podcast, and no one's going to go back and expose me for this hot take I have right now.
Yeah, that was definitely a hot take.
That's the beauty of the daily podcast, though, is there's so much content we're putting out that I can pretty much say whatever I want.
Yeah,
people just, there's no accountability. It's great.
Once we get big enough, people are going to hold you accountable, and then people are going to remember this. It's like Colin Cowherd. People still bring up his stupid John Wall take.
Well, yeah, that was like a tinge of like weird racism. I tried to avoid that in my dumb takes. Generally, my dumb takes are based in nonsense, and I feel like the people appreciate my general whimsy.
All right. Colleen wants to know, why did Terry Rozier not start in Philly? And she also wants to know, how long will it take Kyrie to settle in? I think the Celtics just needed Rozier off the bench against Philly. He's been great, though. We haven't talked enough about Terry Rozier. Tito Three Sticks has been really, really good to start this season.
He was the first person on Aaron Bain's big Australian boat last night. Like,
yeah.
He's amazing. And the fact that he's just not turning the ball over, I think, is just – it's a great kind of improvement in his –
He's never really turned the ball over, though. That's never been an issue for him. He's been really good at that his whole career.
Well, now he's making threes and actually like making some of the absurd layup attempts that he goes for.
Yeah.
He's been really good, and I wouldn't be like, I don't expect him to start, but I do expect him to have a lot of minutes next to Kyrie Irving. As we mentioned before, there's not a lot of shooting on the Celtics roster, and Rozier. Tito Three Sticks has been one of the few guys who can knock down a three. So if you're going to put some shooting around Kyrie Irving, he's going to be one of the guys. And so I expect him to have to get a decent amount of minutes, especially if he keeps shooting this way. I don't think he's going to start in that situation, especially with Marcus Smart out. You need someone to kind of run the second unit. But I do expect him to get a fair amount of playing time, especially as he's playing this well. And the thing that I think has been most impressive about him is his he's made a lot of plays on the defensive end and is like really feels like he's getting a lot of steals and has been just in the passing lanes. And that's not something that I remember. He's always been athletically pretty gifted and kind of long and very quick, but I just don't remember him getting as many steals in previous seasons as he seems to have in at least in these first three games.
To your point, he has more than doubled his steal rate from last season over the first three games. So
I love analytics backing me up.
Your eye test is right on point there. So shout out to you. Shout out to us. Shout out to everybody. All right. What else we got? What else we got here? Oh, we got it. Why do people still ask about DeMarcus Cousins, man? Why? Patrick Colburn, who has 280 characters, God damn you. is it too soon for... bring Boogie to Boston. He fits beautifully into what they want to do. Also, with the Gordon Hayward injury, we are hopeful, but no guarantees he gets back to 100%. We need to gamble. Boogie is not the gamble. If the Celtics wanted Boogie, they could have had him when he was traded last year. He got traded for a bag of donuts. They weren't very interested in him. They have huge questions about how he is as a teammate, how he is in the locker room, how he is to play with, and those issues with him, they seep over onto the court. Like, he takes possessions off. I've never been a big Boogie guy. I'm off the Boogie train. So yes, it is too soon for bring Boogie to Boston. It will always be too soon for bring Boogie to Boston.
I watched probably like three quarters of the Pelicans Lakers game last night. Just because
that's three quarters too many.
Basketball is fun, man. And football is no longer fun. But Boogie, talk about skinny Marcus. Boogie's like slimmed down a bunch in the offseason. He seems more athletic, but you're right. His just general attitude is just shitty.
He's a sad boy.
He's more of an angry boy than a sad boy. Like, you're right. There's a lot of sadness behind those eyes. And it feels like he just gets upset at teammates, upset at the refs. it never really like puts everything together, and he has so much talent. Like I saw him like just destroy some people, able to take like Andrew Bogut off the dribble from the 3-point line and like do some crazy spin moves. He has all the talent in the world, but there's just zero chance that I think the Celtics are trading for him. So it's entirely too early, and maybe we can talk Boogie trade at the like closer to the deadline if the Pelicans are really struggling. But even then, I just don't think the Celtics are prepared to give up anything for kind of just his anger and his off the court stuff. Even as talented as he is, even as nicely as he would probably fit next to Al Horford, it's just it doesn't feel worth it at this point.
And he's a free agent after this season, right?
I think he has one more year after this. No, he is a free agent after this season.
Yeah, so no.
Why rent him? And he's just going to go somewhere else because he's going to piss everyone else off in the short time that he's in Boston.
No Boogie. All right, last question. Justin Hunter, with Hayward out, how much will our focus change from chasing Cleveland to getting the best cohesion and experience from our group? I think the focus was always on getting the best cohesion and experience, but I think the expectations win-wise from the outside have changed. You know, this team, if fully healthy, I think it's possible the Celtics could have challenged Cleveland. Now, there's no chance, so the focus can rightly go to how much do the young guys improve? How does Kyrie adjust? How do all these pieces start to fit together? And that's good. That's kind of how I feel like the Celtics will always be under Brad Stevens, in the fact that, like, yes, they want to win championships. That's the goal for everybody. But it's more about, like, actually building a team day-to-day is what he'll always focus on. So I think that was kind of going to be the focus anyway. But without Hayward, definitely you get more minutes for young guys. Now Kyrie doesn't have all this like massive pressure on him to adjust immediately, because like it's okay. He can take his time, he can adjust naturally, he can learn the system, he can figure things out, and hopefully by the end of the year, hopefully sooner than that, but hopefully just really start to get things and start to understand his role and all of that, and next to all these young pieces who are all very talented. So wasn't a good thing to lose Hayward, but there are some positives in the fact that you get some of those young guys more reps.
Yeah, I think the expectation of competing and possibly winning the East is no longer there, and maybe that takes pressure off the team. I just think it because there's no Hayward, like Stevens' leash with the young guys is going to be so much longer, just because there is that expectation to be like one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference is not there. So you can live with kind of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown mistakes a little bit more, just because you're working for their development. Now, with that being said, I don't know if Cleveland at this point, I don't think they're going to be as dominant. I mean, I think they're clearly the best team in the East, and I still don't think the Celtics are like at their level, but I don't think they're head and shoulders above everyone else in the Eastern Conference. I mean, with the way Giannis is playing, the Bucks could be a real problem. I think the Wizards are going to be good. If Isaiah does, it takes like a while to come back. I don't know if Cleveland is like obviously the best team in the East, and this is a bit of a tangent just because I don't think the Celtics' focus is now going to be competing with Cleveland, but I don't know. I don't think Cleveland is immediately anointed the Eastern Conference winners, just because we've seen them have some spacing issues. Dwayne Wade clearly doesn't really fit in with that offense. He's already moved to the bench. So I don't know. I just wanted to take the opportunity to disparage Cleveland a little bit, because I think the more they continue to struggle, the more the question of like where LeBron is going is going to weigh over them and hang over their heads. So I don't know. I think the East is still pretty open. With that being said, I don't know if it's open to the Celtics at this point without Hayward, but it's not immediately Cleveland Cavaliers, or like you can't pencil them into the finals.
Yeah, it all depends on Isaiah there. If Isaiah is Isaiah, then they're going to be very, very, very difficult to beat in the East. And if Isaiah is not Isaiah, then that team has some issues, because Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade are both washed. They don't play defense. That team, they got some issues, but they have LeBron as well, which turns out it's a pretty big deal. Anyway,
it's helpful.
We're also a pretty big deal. If you don't subscribe to us already, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to us, download us, give us a 5-star rating. We need it. We want it. We desperately, desperately have to have it. And yeah, that's it for this episode, I guess. I appreciate you, Sam. I appreciate you, listeners. I appreciate all you. That's it for this episode of Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.